distill in a simple way for the Sunday audience who won't have heard anything, probably. Why we're doing what we're doing by carefully considering this systematic and comprehensive presentation of the Sandarbhas, because we want to know Krishna, and we can know Krishna through Srimad Bhagavatam, and Sandarbhas will help us hear with rapt attention the Bhagavatam's message so that our intelligence, mind, and soul can awaken to the message of Krishna properly. We spoke about, I'm repeating it now for the third time, even if we can't understand everything, that's okay. With conviction that the message is fully transcendental, sound vibration is fully transcendental, capable of gradually awakening our dormant Krishna prema that's inside like a seed. That sound vibration awakens that gradually. Then we also discussed the Pramana Khanda section up through verse 26, where Srimad Bhagavatam is accepted, demonstrated, proven firmly by Jiva Goswami as the best means of knowing Krishna, source of valid knowledge about that which we'd like to know, Krishna. And we also reviewed the methodology that Jiva Goswami commits to follow to all of the Sandarbhas. Then this morning we also heard verses 29 and 30. So we're going to begin with verse 31. But 29 was a discussion about the heart of Shukadev, because Jiva Goswami reasons that by understanding the heart of the Bhagavatam speaker, we can understand the message that he speaks. So we heard about his being fully, he wasn't on the path of, you know, getting there, cultivating Brahman realization. He was fully realized in Brahman happiness. His heart was filled with it. And yet he became attracted to the charming pastimes of Krishna, heard from his father. Then he sat as a student, a perfectly realized, Brahman realized soul, sat as a student to learn Srimad Bhagavatam from his father. And then he expressed it in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam that we now have spoken to Maharaj Parikshit. So that's the heart of Shukadev. And then we began text 30, hearing about the heart of Vyas, a heart that was perfect in knowledge and yet having compiled out of compassion, compiled all of the Vedas, felt something's missing. That pinch that we all, if we're honest with ourselves, we also feel something's incomplete. Then he was instructed by his spiritual master, Narada Muni, the reason why and what to do. He hadn't sufficiently glorified Krishna. And what to do was two things: sit in trance of meditation, and that which you realize, that should be the subject of the literature that you write that will fully satisfy you and fully satisfy anyone who properly hears it. So he did that, and we heard the first of six verses. Bhakti yogena manasi samyak pranihate male. He fixed his mind in trance of meditation, in the mood of devotion, bhakti yogena manasi samyak. Samyak means complete. Pranihate means he was in samadhi. Amale means there was not a tinge of material affinity in his mind. Then he had some realization. Apashat means he saw. Purusham Purnam, so we spent some time discussing what does that mean. Jiva Goswami helps us understand it means that he saw the original feature of Krishna. When you see the original feature of Krishna, it means you see everything. Like Prabhupada said, when Krishna appears, his whole transcendental abode appears. He doesn't come alone. He comes with everything. Govardhan Hill, River Jamuna, peacocks, birds, trees, cowherds, boys, cows, Mother Jasoda, Nanda Maharaj. He saw the whole thing. There's another meaning of Purusham Purnam that can mean super soul. We discussed what that was about technically. Krishna may not show that fullness. Krishna may just show his Paramatma feature, in which case he voluntarily submits himself to not showing everything. Instead, he give direction to the material energy. Maya Dyakshina Prakriti. Bhagavad Gita 7:14. In that case, this term upadhi was introduced. It's going to become a very important concept to understand as we go further. What it does mean, what it doesn't mean, in relation to the living entity, in relation to the Supreme. So that's where we ended, and that's where we're going to begin. This is Shyamasundara, the deity. When you go to Vrindavan and you see the Radha Shyamasundara temple, this is his form. So now, there's another thing that Jiva Goswami says by inference. And the inference, I'll read what he writes, but it's very simple. Supposing somebody says, well, you know, tomorrow is Ekadasi. But supposing, you know, one evening you say to somebody, did you look in the sky? This evening is a full moon. And when you say, this evening is a full moon, you don't just see the moon, you see the effulgence of the moon. Is it possible to see a full moon without seeing the effulgence? You don't say, oh, and not only that, and not only saw the full moon, but I also saw the effulgence of the full moon. It's inferred. You don't say it. It's just by inference. Similarly, Jiva Goswami says, when Vyas saw Purusham Purnam, he saw Radharani. In fact, I don't even have to read the text. It's just, it's by inference. So here they are, Shyamasundara and Radharani. Because if you see Krishna, you see Krishna and Radha on the same. This is a Gaur Purnima last year. There's Srimati Radharani. Now, she's the internal potency that Vyas saw by inference. Vyas also saw the external potency, explicitly stated, as shown here. Mayam cha tad apashrayam. Notice this word apashrayam has in it ashraya. Ashraya is very important. You'll hear this one again and again. Ashraya, the shelter. Because Krishna is the shelter of everything. So he's the shelter also of Maya. He's the shelter of his internal potency, but he's the shelter of the external potency. And what Jiva Goswami is now going to explain is she was at a distance. She, this Mayam Cha Tadapasharam, is not the internal potency, but is the external potency who was to be seen at a distance. And he makes a declaration. He's following his methodology. Then he's going to give scriptural references to support his declaration. So here we go. This is from Canto 1, Chapter 7, verse number 4. He now looks at the same chapter, verse 23, where it says, it is said, you are the original personality of Godhead who expand yourself all over the creations, plural, and are transcendental to the material energy. You have cast away the effects of the material energy by dint of your spiritual potency. There's this internal potency, and then there's this external potency, the material energy. You are always situated in eternal bliss and transcendental knowledge. You're not covered by Maya. You're in control of Maya, and she's at a distance. Cast away the effects of the material energy. Jiva Goswami then goes on. Thus, the words Mayam Cha Tadapashayam, or along with his external energy, which was under his full control, implies that Maya is under his shelter, Ashraya, in an inferior role. She is not his internal energy, since she runs away from him and keeps at a distance. This is stated later in the Bhagavatam, Canto 2. Maya, feeling ashamed, flees the Lord's direct presence. So now a little review. What's in his vision, his realization, what's in his heart? He sees Purusham Purnam, Krishna, in his original feature. He sees the internal potency and everything else that's with the spiritual world. He sees the external energy. He sees her mood in relation to him. She is under his control. She's at a distance. Now, more about this internal potency. Jiva Goswami says, we're going to talk more about the internal potency. It was inferred that Vyasa saw, but there are different effects of this internal potency, coming attractions. And we're going to talk about it more later. One of those verses where the internal potency is discussed is 176, where it says, the living entities become free from their contamination by the internal potency. The material miseries of the living entity, which are superfluous to him, can be directly mitigated by the linking process of devotional service. So that's one of the effects, a preliminary effect of the internal potency. It diminishes the effect of the external potency. And on the very highest of stages is this highest, the internal potency stage that awakens love of God. So now he's making some declaration, he's given scriptural references, and now he's going to explain them. In the first of these texts, that's 176, the influence of devotional service is understood to be a preliminary function of the Lord's internal potency by the fact of its overcoming the power of illusion. Then this higher stage, 1.7.10, we're going to go over these again, He's just like being, it's like a lawyer, just making a case. In the second, 1:7:10, the qualities of the Lord prove themselves the highest functions of his internal energy by their superiority to even the bliss of Brahman. Like Shukadeva experienced, so also Vyasa's experiencing. He's doing this thing of, do the cross-reference. What was Vyasa's heart? What is Shukadeva's heart? Do they match? And they match. Then he says something, I'll explain first. The Vishnu feature and the Brahman feature are not presented. It doesn't say Vyasa saw them. Rather, he says, it's inferred that he saw them because he saw Bhagavan. He saw Krishna in his fullness, which means the partial representation of Krishna he saw and the Brahman feature of Krishna he saw. It's not stated, but it's to be understood. This is a statement that's also going to be supported by scripture later. Making a case. Okay, so here's the little paragraph. The reason why the Purusha, that's Lord Vishnu, Paramatma, and Brahman are not separately mentioned in describing Vyasa's trance is that they are both implicitly included. It's implied he saw them by seeing Bhagavan. What is that? The Purusha, Lord Vishnu, Super Soul, as the predominator of Maya, is a partial appearance of the Supreme Lord, while Brahman is the manifestation of his formless, impersonal aspect. This will be fully elucidated in Sandarbha 2 and 3, coming attractions. But it's, and in Sandarbhas 2 and 3, both, he's going to again refer to this realization of Vyasa, and again this realization of Vyasa, and again the because it's foundational. Now he's just doing, you know, basics, and alluding to more is going to come in detail. Here's Baladev Vidyabhusan's remark. Because he, Baladev also wrote a commentary on the Sandarbhas. So he writes, why did Vyasa not see the forms of Paramatma and Brahman? And then he gives the answer. Because Paramatma is Bhagavan's ansha, or partial manifestation. Brahman is included in him. Thus they're not mentioned separately. It's implied. So here's a nice image of Krishna Balaram in Vrindavan. Don't you wish you were in Vrindavan? Kartik's over, but it's still Vrindavan. So here's Bhagavan Krishna and his expansion Balaram. Now these two, this is the Bhagavan feature, although we're not saying, oh, and by the way, I also saw Paramatma and Brahman. But it's implied because they're expansions of him or partial manifestations of him. Baladev continues with his commentary. Maya, although a personal energy of the Lord, has a function inferior to his internal potency, Swarup Shakti, because of her, that's Maya's association with the contaminated, rebellious souls, the Lord makes no contact with her after his initial glance. Initial glance, we'll make reference to that in a moment. The glance of Mahavishnu brings about material creation, after which Mahavishnu or the Supreme Lord has no contact at all. And then it's just his glance, and after that, nothing. Indeed, she keeps herself out of his sight. Again, this is Baladev making reference to this second canto statement. An analogy is given by Baladeva. That's the king has a queen and he has a maidservant. So the maidservant stays outside his quarters, whereas the queen is with him. So here's the queen, Srimati Radharani, and she's always with Krishna. Even there may be pastimes where they appear to be separate, she's always with Krishna. How could it be otherwise? Is it possible for the sunshine to be separated from the sun? No. Is it possible for Radharani to be separated from Krishna? No. There's a pastime where it feels like, it looks like, but it's just a pastime because they're always united. Next, we just finished text 31. We're going to cover two more, 32 and 33. 32 now brings up 175. We heard Bhakti Yogena Manasi Samyak Praniyate Amale. So now that's 174. Here's 175. Yaya Samohito Jiva Atmanam Trigunatmakam Paropi Manute Artham Tadkritam Chabi Padyate. Very important verse out of the six. We'll now hear the translation and Jiva Goswami's taking word by word, putting it under a high-powered microscope, and making sure we understand the implications. Translation. Due to this external energy, not the internal, due to this external energy, the living entity, although transcendental to the three modes of nature, thinks himself a product, the material product, and thus undergoes the reactions and the material miseries. So now he's seeing karma. He's seeing the living entity. He's seeing the living entity as conditioned. In the next verse, he's going to see the living entity becoming liberated. And how? But this verse is very important. Very, very important, because it's the realization of Vyasa as the basis of the whole Srimad Bhagavatam, that says the living entity and Paramapurusha are different. They're not one entity. It refutes Shankara's teachings, in other words. So it's going to be referred to multiple times. 7.4, 7.5 are both very important in what's coming up. Okay, so the verse beginning Yaya, this 175. He makes the statement, before I read it, I'll explain it. If you remember, I know it was a long time ago, but this morning, we heard about Sambandha Avideya and Prayojana, and we heard that from the heart, we have some understanding of Sambandha Avideya Prayojana, and that then the Prayojana was love of God, and the means of getting there was the process of devotional service. That was Shukadeva Goswami's heart that then tells us what the message that he spoke was. Jiva Goswami is saying, this verse, 175, says, identical was the heart of Vyasa, the process, and Prayojana, the goal. Here we go. The process, Abhideya, and the goal, Prayojana, as we have defined them, Shukadev, are based on the essential difference between the Lord and the living entity, because if they're one entity, then you can't have devotional service. Correct? Devotional service means servant and servitation is based on the fact that they're two entities, the living entity and the supreme, and the process of devotional service that connects them. That Sri Vyas saw this constitutional distinction is shown by the verse, Yaya. So in verse 4, it doesn't say anything about the living entity. Here it speaks about the living entity and the living entity being bewildered. In the next verse, 6, is the living entity becoming relieved from bewilderment. But there's another, the Paramapurusha, that doesn't become bewildered at all because Maya is at a distance. under his control. The train is moving. Srimad Bhagavatam is unfolding just by carefully considering the realization of Vyas. This word yaya means although. So does paro api. Api means although. But although the living entity is by nature pure spirit, transcendental to the three inert material modes, when deluded by Maya, he considers himself a product of those modes, the inert material body. I'm the body. And I was produced from the body, and what's produced from the body is mine, material consciousness. Although he's transcendental, yaya. This delusion causes the living entity to suffer unwanted consequences, namely, the miseries of material life. He's going to come back and revisit this. So just hit the pause button, put it over there in the parking lot, we're going to come back. Next, very important, very, very important, which is the living entity is both conscious and consciousness. Now, have you heard Prabhupada say that before? I heard Prabhupada say it many times, and I just accepted it. I didn't really think too much about it. I couldn't really understand why he was making this distinction, conscious and consciousness. What's going on? It's very important. We'll see. To explain it, I have this nice graphic of a lamp. Looks like something that you may have offered during Dhammadharastakam, a little clay cup and an offering of a lamp to Dhammadhar, or Diwali, maybe. So the lamp is itself, the flame is luminous. But it's not just the flame is luminous. The luminous flame illuminates things around it. Yes? Not self-contained luminous. It illumines other things. So similarly, conscious, living entity is conscious, and the living entity expands consciousness. It expands consciousness through the body and even goes beyond the body, where you can see something at a distance because consciousness touches it, or you hear something that's from a distance. So it's conscious and consciousness. Like a lamp is luminous and illuminates things around it. It's important to understand the living entity, then in turn to understand God, the supreme living entity. It's fundamental. We're building a foundation to understand the Bhagavatam's message. Okay, so living entity is both conscious and possesses consciousness. And in 175, we find these words. That the living entity possesses consciousness is implied in the words yaya samohita. Living entity becomes bewildered or become bewildered by maya. Yaya samohita. So consciousness become bewildered. Living entity is conscious and consciousness become bewildered. Right? Like the moon in the sky that's covered by clouds and branches of trees. Go beyond the clouds, there's no covering. But on this side, the brightness of the full moon you won't see because of the clouds and the branches. So the consciousness of a living entity becomes bewildered. So there's conscious living entity and consciousness that become bewildered. Or manute means he considers. So conscious beings consider things. There's consciousness, there's conscious, and then there's consciousness extending to things that you may consider. You follow? A and confused, excuse me, and confirmed by the following words from Bhagavad Gita. There it is. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita 5:15, the living beings are bewildered because their consciousness is covered by ignorance. So their conscious beings and consciousness becomes covered. It's important. Furthermore, not only does the living being consist of pure spiritual consciousness, but he also possesses consciousness as a component of his essential nature. Just as light, which consists of nothing but illumination, also possesses the capacity to illumine itself and other things. I explained that just from the visual, that lamp, but here's his words. Now, where is this train going? He wants to prepare his reader, us, to understand the difference between the Srimad Bhagavatam's message written by Vyas and Shankaracharya's teachings, who's a student of Vyas. Yes? Chronologically, historically, Buddha appeared some few hundred years before Christ, unknown exactly when. And then Christ appeared. And then Shankaracharya appeared after that, 700 to 800 years after Christ. Shankaracharya rejected the position of Buddha because Buddha rejected the Vedas, and he accepted the Vedas. You accept the Vedas, you accept Vyas. And on the basis of Vyasa's Vedas, he establishes something that's other than Vyasa's realization. That's a no-no. So that's what this sentence here says. Thus is refuted the contrary opinion, that's Shankara's opinion, that the jiva exists only as an upadhi of Brahman, and that liberation is simply the elimination of this upadhi. We'll hear a whole bunch more about it, starting with the next slide. So in this verse, 175, the phrase Niyasa Mohita shows that Maya alone is responsible for deluding the living being. The Lord remains uninvolved. Okay, so here's our friend Shankaracharya. And there's this phrase, the contrary opinion. So here's his contrary opinion. I'm going to read it directly from this nice Tattvasandarbha book, the third paragraph in the purport of text 32. According to Shankaracharya's Advaitavad, the real nature of the jiva is that he is pure consciousness. With that much, the Vaishnavas have no difficulty agreeing, but Shankara also teaches that on the level of ultimate reality, not only do dualities disappear, including the distinction between jivatma and paramatma, there's no paramatma. There's no jiva. There's only Brahman. That's his teaching. But also, do the separate existence of knower, known, and knowledge. There's no consciousness. It's just conscious. Thus, according to Shankara, the pure self does not have knowledge. It is consciousness. And it is not an object of knowledge. You can't know it because it's just pure consciousness. You can't have subject-object because there's only one. It can't be an object of consciousness. Not conscious, nor consciousness, nor is that an object of consciousness. It's just one thing. Homogeneous Brahman. Rather, it is chinmatra. You'll see that word again. Simply pure knowledge without duality. The separate existence of the jiva is an illusion. And upadhi, falsely imposed on undifferentiated Brahman, which Shankara presents as the ultimate reality. Jiva Goswami has his boxing gloves on and he's going to have a little boxing match with Shankaracharya. Guess who wins? Assisting him is Baladev Vidyabhusan, and I'm going to read Baladev Vidyabhusan's reply. It's in the fifth paragraph of this purport, text 32. Srila Baladev Vidyabhusan points out how the description of Vyasadeva's trance in Srimad Bhagavatam defeats such arguments of the Mayavadis. He asserts, Vyas and Baladev assert that the jivas are not illusory reflections of the Supreme, but their existence is real and separate. They're eternally conscious, living spirits, as confirmed by the words paropi from 175. In Vyasadeva's trance, it is not the Supreme Soul who becomes transformed by Maya, but the consciousness of the Lord's rebellious servants. You know, the clouds and the branches. The consciousness. The extension of the light of the moon as it comes to our attention. The Bhagavatam says of the living being, paropi manute anartam. Although he is superior, he identifies himself with what is worthless. And then the worthless is found in the next verse, 176. We haven't shown it yet. Anarto pashyamam sakshat bhakti yogam. The direct meaning of dispelling this worthlessness is, excuse me, the direct means of dispelling this worthlessness is devotional service. That's Vyasa's realization. 176. Prior to becoming deluded, the jivas existed as separate entities, and they will continue to exist separately even after their liberation. Their misidentification with matter is dispelled, not their separate existence. They are pure consciousness, and at the same time, they possess consciousness. This is possible in the same way that a lamp, functionally nothing but illumination, still illuminates itself and other objects. Vyasadeva's vision that the jivas become bewildered and think themselves as products of matter establishes that the is an innate quality that can never be removed from the soul but can be distorted by the influence of material illusion. After liberation, a jiva remains possessor of consciousness. Only the direction of his consciousness has been rectified. Anybody that has heard Srila Prabhupada it resonates all over the place. He just puts in very simple language high language Jiva Goswami is saying here. It's not that we're to become desireless. We're to become to direct desire in relation to the Supreme Lord's desire. That's bhakti. It's quite simple. And when you do that, then the affinity for matter subsides. The expectation of happiness through the material circumstances of the world around you, it fades. It doesn't become so important to you anymore. It's not like you're unaware of it. You may deal with it in a practical, religious, responsible, etc. way. But it's not where you your happiness lies. Your happiness lies in that connection. Sambandha, the relationship with Krishna through the medium of serving Him, Abhideya, up to the stage of love of God. And the miseries are mitigated. Yayasa mohito jiva atmanam trigunatmakam paropi manute anartam. That's 175. Everything becomes changed. The world around you doesn't change. Your consciousness changes. Consciousness changes. Instead of affinity for matter, it's affinity for Krishna consciousness. And then you can act in Krishna consciousness with the world around you. You don't have to reject the world around you. You have to transform your consciousness. But please appreciate, Mayavadis say there's no such thing. And therefore, if you're going to get anywhere in spiritual life, you have to become a sannyasi. You have to reject the world and become like stone. And then you can feel the bliss of Brahman. Well, that's not Bhagavad Gita's teaching. It's not Bhagavatam's teaching. It's not Vyasa's realization. So are we sentimentalists or are we grounded in proper understanding according to the author of the Vedas, Vyas, his realization? What did he realize? You appreciate what Jiva Goswami is helping us do. Become convinced, firmly, clearly, not sentimentalist, but clear in our understanding of what is the Bhagavatam's message and how are we supposed to apply it in our lives. Baladev says, Shankara has the idea that liberation for the jiva is destruction of the antakarana. He uses that phrase all the time. I've become familiar with it. It means the subtle body. Karana means causation. And anta means within. The subtle cause within. The subtle body. Your false ego. Your mind, your intelligence, just dissolve them and become Brahman. Yay. No. This is refuted by Vyasa's realization, 175, that says the jiva is already separate. So you don't have to dissolve anything. You just have to properly direct it. Don't switch your intelligence off and your mind off and even your sense of who am I. It's the exercise of self-discovery to understand I am Krishna's eternal part, qualitatively like Him, meant for a loving relationship with Him. That's who I am. That's self-discovery. And in the mature stage, an ecstatic love. So now here's another graphic that shows the same thing. Okay, step one. Living entity rejects Krishna. Then what happens? Well, the living entity gets covered by Maya. And Maya places the living entity under illusion. Well, there's the modes of nature acting according to passion, goodness, and ignorance. And then the living entity is really busy with fruit of activity, trying to be the enjoyer of the fruits of their activity. Now, then there's the bhakti process. Now, watch the graphic on the right side. It's Baladev likens this to a candle flame that, after burning gradually, the oxygen becomes extinguished. And then the flame goes out. And all you have left is the pot with no candle flame. And that's our conditioned state, where the consciousness of Krishna becomes covered. Covered to the point where we don't even know it. We're so out of touch with Krishna. that's the result of rejecting Krishna. And how is it that Maya covers Krishna? Covers the living entity? Well, Jiva Goswami, to support his statements, makes reference to Srimad Bhagavatam, where, it's very nice, Maya's relationship with her master, Krishna, 2:5:13 says, the illusory energy of the Lord cannot stand within his sight, being ashamed of her position. But those bewildered by her always talk nonsense, being absorbed in thoughts of I and mine. The Sanskrit phrase, being ashamed, is vilajamanaya, means that Maya has feelings. She's feeling ashamed. She understands Krishna wants the living entities to come back to him, and here I am sending the living entities far away from him. But she can't help it because they're inimical towards him, so she wants them to stay away from him. So she covers them and sends them away from him. So she's feeling ashamed. Then, this is making reference to the next verse, 176, but Jiva Goswami, being a scholar of the Bhagavatam, refers to 11:2:37. Very often quoted verse, Vayam dutiya abhinivesha takshat ishad epetasya. Epetasya means one who has turned away. And bhayam means fear, and dutiya means something other than Krishna, and abhinivesh means you become absorbed in. You become absorbed in something other than Krishna. Dutiyam abhiniveshatak. When that happens, bhayam, fear. Because we don't know what's going to happen next minute. Especially with a certain person as the president-elect, who knows what's going to happen in this country? What's happened in the world? I mean, who knows what's next? Who would have thought? It's a nightmare. We'll wake up and it'll be all over, right? Maybe it will be all over. Anyway, bhayam dutriya abhinivesha takshat ishada petasya. This is the result of the living entity turning away from Krishna. They become covered by Maya, and Maya creates this condition of fear. Therefore, based on this scriptural authority, Jiva says, Maya covers the real nature of the living entity and entices them to identify with matter. Krishna doesn't do it, Maya does it. Why does Maya do it? Because the living entities turn away from Krishna. So they become covered. And the result is fear. Now how to overcome fear? Turn to Krishna. And it's not just, you know, out of being a wimp, you know, a weakling, you don't know what to do, so you turn to God because I'm weak. It's transcendental knowledge. Persons who have proper knowledge do that. One more verse and we're done. I think we're going to be able to finish on time. Now, how does this work that Maya has feelings? Because there's an argument that says, well, wait a minute, Maya is just an energy. So how can an energy have feelings? And how does Krishna feel towards Maya, who has these feelings, that she's feeling ashamed? Jiva Goswami writes, nor can the Lord fail to be kindly disposed to her, Maya, the presiding deity of matter, his servant since before the creation. He desires, moreover, that the Jivas turn back toward him even if only out of fear of her. Because that condition of fear is an impetus to take shelter. It's part of a scheme or plan of Krishna. She's serving Krishna in this way. Now the image is Mahavishnu glancing over Pradhan or Maya, and creation then takes place. So even before creation taking place, she exists. And she exists as a maidservant, as an expansion of his internal potency. She's his external potency, a reflection of him. And he desires, the whole purpose of creation is to have them come back. And if it's necessary to do it, best if living entities just hear the all-attractive qualities of Krishna. And they go, oh yeah, I forgot Krishna. Let me just go back to Krishna. But some living entities are very stubborn. They can't get it just from hearing. So they have to learn to the school of hard knocks. They have to go to jail and suffer. Unnecessarily, but she does that, Maya does that, by Krishna's direction. Now, what is Krishna hard-hearted? Some people speak like that. So we're going to hear, with the references shown at the bottom here, how it's not like that. Now, those of you that were with us last Thanksgiving, you remember this gentleman? He's the critic. The person that has doubts about everything and anything. So, the unspoken critic, the Sanskrit term is purva paksha. You make a statement and then somebody says, well, wait a minute, maybe it's not true because of what about such and such? So there's going to be three of these. So the unspoken critic says, wait a minute, besides being all-powerful, the Supreme Lord is said to be unlimitedly merciful, always thinking of everyone's welfare. Why then does he fail to stop Maya from harassing the jivas? This is asked in different ways, like, if God is all good, why is there suffering in the world? Since there's suffering in the world, must be there's no God. We've heard that one. So, Jiva Goswami answers, well, he doesn't interfere with Maya because she's doing what he wants to help bring the living entities back to him. But if they don't get it, he personally teaches the living entities how to get free from her clutches by surrendering to him. Maya will never again harass any Jiva who has taken full shelter of the Supreme Lord. Maya Jakshena Prakriti. Well, okay, Krishna gives nice instructions to the living entities how to become free from Maya, but still have a doubt. Why does the Lord allow Maya to create obstacles for the living entity when he wants them to surrender to him? Why does he allow her to repeatedly present various allurements that prevent the jivas from discriminating properly between proper and improper action? The living entity's attempts at surrendering. Well, Jiva Goswami says the answer to that is in Srimad Bhagavatam. 3:25:25. The Lord's preference is to immunize them against the disease of material illusion by sadhu sangha or devotee association, gradually bringing them back to the healthy condition of life. But he gives them an option because they have our critic is persistent. If the punishment inflicted on the jivas is for their ultimate good, then why should they be allowed to enjoy? If they were simply thrown into an ocean of ceaseless misery, they would have no choice but to quickly take complete shelter of the personality of Godhead. Not like I really want to see that happen, but just, you know, logical argument. And then Jiva Goswami ends this section with a very brilliant analysis. This doubt has a twofold reply. First, ceaseless misery is not good for developing transcendental understanding because one's mind becomes too disturbed to contemplate scriptural truths. Second, ceaseless misery is not necessary because any jiva with even a little rudimentary transcendental knowledge will realize that there is no real happiness in this material world. Now, some people don't realize that, but Lord Krishna therefore advises us not to strive for so-called happiness in this material world. Sama dukkha sukham dhiram. One who remains equipoised in both misery and happiness is qualified for liberation. Only such a person can taste real happiness. Others experience only the illusion of happiness. In conclusion, the Lord has designated a two-part program for both chastising and rehabilitating the jivas. This is Maya's service. On the one hand, Maya kicks them. And on the other, the Lord instructs them through various incarnations, scriptures, pure devotees. The Maya's actions and the Lord's actions perfectly complement one another. So the work of Maya to, it's not that Maya wants or Krishna wants, but whatever it takes. It's like a parent. Or you, as parents, try to nicely, calmly, pleasantly explain such and such is good for you. And this other thing is really not good for you. It's not a good idea. But if there's insistence and insistence, and especially if it's something that causes safety and harm and danger, the parent may take strong measures. This is a commentary of Vishwanath from Lord Brahma's prayers, that sometimes parents give sweet nectar, and sometimes they give bitter medicine. It's not when they give bitter medicine, it's harsh and cruel. It's to help cure a disease that requires bitter medicine. So sometimes Krishna does like that or has Maya do like that, and it's bitter medicine, but the purpose is curing the disease. And the disease is rebelliousness. Okay. I'm going to read one part of one paragraph from text 33 purport or commentary. It's not very nice. Maya, being a pure devotee of the Lord, does not like to see anyone suffer, but as unpleasant as it may seem, imprisoning and punishing the souls who turn away from God is her service to him. She performs this service only because the Supreme Lord wills her to. The Supreme Lord wants everyone of his creatures to be happy always. But true happiness outside of voluntary loving service to him is impossible. He deputizes Maya to teach this lesson to the forgetful jivas by various means. Those who are sufficiently intelligent can learn simply by hearing from Vedic authority, while others need to be instructed more sternly. This world was created not only for our material enjoyment and suffering, but more importantly, for our spiritual re-education. So Maya has part of this re-education profile, part of what she's supposed to do. Now, Maya is a person, and she has feelings. And one of those feelings is she's feeling ashamed. So she's not just an energy. So some people think, well, that's not right. Maya is an energy. Here's what Jiva Goswami writes. The Supreme Lord, in his pastime appearance as Vyasadeva, taught this 175 verse most explicitly. Anyway. One may question, Maya is an energy. And energy means the capacity to do work, which is a particular quality of something. How then can Maya feel shame or have other emotions? That's our friend again raising this question. And Jiva Goswami's answer is that even though Maya is in fact an energy, we hear from our Shruti authority about the presiding goddesses and numerous such energies as an example in the conversation between Indra and Maya in the Kena Upanishad. And when I finish this story, it ends the section. So, most of you know, stories are common in Puranas and not so common in the Upanishads, because the Upanishads is more philosophy, not stories. But it's so important, this philosophy, that it's in Kena Upanishad, the following story is narrated, which Jiva Goswami makes reference to. And the reference goes like this. There was a big battle between the demigods and the demons. And it was going on and on and on, and the demigods were in difficulty. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead joined the side of the demigods, and they were victorious. The demigods. So they started celebrating. Yay, we won. This is our own victory and our own glory. This is Upanishads. So Lord Vishnu can understand, they're in Maya. And I have to teach them a lesson. Don't be in Maya. So what he did was, he manifested himself before them in the form of a yaksha. What's a yaksha? Yaksha kind of... Well, Kuvera is worshipped by yakshas. They're kind of not demigods and not human. There's something kind of mysterious. They're not ghosts. They're just like superhuman beings, kind of yakshas. So the Supreme Lord manifested himself as a yaksha before the demigods. And they didn't recognize, who's this in our assembly? Who is this yaksha? So they sent Agni, the god of fire. Agni, you're the knower of everything created. Find out who this yaksha is. So he answered, yes, I will do it. So Agni came before the yaksha. And the yaksha asked Agni, who are you? And Agni said, I am the god of fire. I know everything created. What power do you possess? Oh, that's the yaksha to Agni. What power do you possess? I can burn anything. So the yaksha said, see if you can burn this. He had a blade of grass, a blade of grass in his hand. See if you can burn this. So with all of his might, Agni tried to burn the grass, but it wouldn't burn. So then he went back to the other demigods and said, I couldn't find out who that yaksha was. That was his assignment. Who is this? So they then approached the god of wind, Vayu, and said, can you go find out who this yaksha is? Yes, I'll go find out who this yaksha is. Oops. Sorry about that. So Vaya came before the Yaksha. That's a diagram of Vayu, by the way. Looks like riding a reindeer or something. It's Christmas time. So Vayu came before the Yaksha, and the Yaksha asked Vayu, "Who are you?" And Vayu said, "I'm the god of wind. I'm the swift traveler of outer space." And then the Yaksha asked the same question, "What power do you possess?" "Well, I can lift anything that exists in this world." The Yaksha held out his blade of grass and said, "See if you can lift this." Tried and he tried and he tried with all his might, but he couldn't lift the blade of grass. So then he went back to the demigod and said, "I don't know who that Yaksha is." So then they deputed Indra, the king of the demigods. "Go find out who the Yaksha is." "Yes, I will do it." So Indra approached the Yaksha, but then the Yaksha disappeared. Immediately after the Yaksha disappeared, a resplendent woman, Devi, appeared in the sky above that place. She was Uma, daughter of the Himalayas. Indra approached her, and Indra asked, "Who is that Yaksha?" And Uma said, "That was the Supreme. By that Supreme's victory only have you, the gods, become glorious." So Indra got it. Oh, we were thinking we take the credit of being powerful warriors, but actually it was the Supreme Lord. That was the Supreme. So now they had this special realization, according to the Upanishads. Agni, Vayu, and Indra are greater than the other gods, for they came in close contact with the Supreme, and they were first to understand this is the Supreme. So this is the end of our session, where the story is being told that the Shakti, Maya Shakti, is a person. Though yes, an energy. Energy of whom? Energy of a person. And that person receives her energy from the source of everything, from the personality of Godhead. So sometimes the personality of Godhead may instruct through others, as in this case, through Uma. But Uma's a person. She has feelings. And Maya is a person. Maya has feelings. She has some Shakti. She has some power. She does certain things. But she also is a person with feelings. And when the living entity gets the message that turning attention away from Krishna is the root of our problem, we start to turn our attention towards Krishna. She helps us. The whole program of bringing suffering changes, and she acts then as the agent of the internal potency to assist us to come closer to Krishna. So we're running out of time. And I've finished the section that I wanted to finish. There's a nice picture of Govindaji in Jaipur. He's the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his deity form. As the Srimad Bhagavatam is the Supreme Personality of Godhead in literary form, as the Holy Name is the Supreme Personality of Godhead in the form of his name. So these merciful manifestations of Krishna are to help us get back to him. So any comments or questions? It'll take a few minutes for if there's any discussion. Yes. Yes. If the living entity gets it, oh, the root of the problem is I turn my attention away from Krishna. I get it. Now I'd like to thank you, Maya, for bringing me to that understanding, she then acts to assist. She performs a different function. She acts like the internal potency. You know, the same stuff that's out there that's deluding us because our desire is to independently enjoy. If the desire is to be in our relationship with Krishna, it provides a facility for us to connect with Krishna. She acts as the internal potency or an agent of the internal potency. Same energy, just depending upon the consciousness of the living entity regarding Krishna in this way or that way. Okay?
Another question.
Sure.
Time-wise, is Vyasa Dev wrote Srimad Bhagavatam first, and then Sukadev Goswami spoke about Srimad Bhagavatam, or Sukadev Goswami spoke on Srimad Bhagavatam, then Vyasa Dev recorded his speech.
Yeah,
which one goes first?
You got it, but there's some additional ones. I'll do it slowly, second time, and then we'll hear it again at the end, in, you know, text 49. So here we go. Vyasadeva took all that sound vibration and put it into written form. Included in that written form was the 18 Puranas, one of which was Srimad Bhagavatam, number one. Okay? Narada came and instructed him. He did his service according to Narada's instruction. He got this realization in trance. He revised edition number two. Expanded and revised edition number two. Then he taught it to his students, including Shukadev, number three. And Vyas recorded it, edition number three. That help? The essence was the. It wasn't. He didn't become. He wasn't. You know, creative writing 101. It was there in the initial. It was an expanded and more emphasis upon Krishna in the second, and then spoken by Shukadev number three. That's what we have. But it's what Shukadev spoke is the same as what Vyas realized.
So are we comparing version 2 to version 3 to
yes.
see if there
is... Yes, we're not. Jiva Goswami is. And he's saying they're carbon copies. Transparently identical copies. Because one is the heart of Vyas, the other is the heart of Shukadev. And one-to-one comparison. Anyone else? Yes, in front of you.
So, Hare Krishna Maharaj, so from last year's discussion, so that means when Vyasadeva wrote the synopsis form, only four verses came out of that box.
Yeah.
Only four. And then
well,
the realizations.
To be very specific, I've not seen it limited like that. It's commonly understood like that, but we're being very careful in, I have not seen our acharyas say that synopsis form was those four. It is commonly understood it is those four. I'm being careful in my answer. If I had to show you the reference that said that initial was those four, I wouldn't be able to do it. It's commonly understood that's what it was.
Okay. Then in last year we also talked about Shweta Varaha Kalpa, mood of goodness of Lord Brahma.
Mm.
And then we said that
you're
going to
bewilder
time,
everybody here. Go ahead. Let's just prepare yourself to not understand your question. there are days of Brahma. I'll back up. According to Jiva Goswami, some days of Lord Brahma are more in the mode of goodness, that's Shweta Kalpa. Some are more in the mode of passion, raja kalpa. And therefore, there are piranhas that are more in the mode of goodness, piranhas in more in the mode of passion, piranhas in the mode of goodness. That's Jiva Goswami's explanation given to us by Gopi Pranadana in this Tattva Sandarbha translation. Go ahead.
So my question was, we talked that 1,000 times in a day of Brahma, they are divided.
Mm.
And we also talked that there are 6 puranas in a mode of ignorance, 6 puranas in a mode of passion, and 6 in goodness.
Yes.
So if it was all the day of goodness, then how come within the same day we have 6 puranas in a mode of ignorance and passion?
Why not? Because they're eternal. They're eternal. When Vyas compiled them, they're eternal. That is to say, supposing you were God, you know, just like, you know, hey, wouldn't it be interesting to be God for a while? And you knew that living entities are going to be under the influence of material nature, and so not creative writing from the personality of Godhead's point of view, but given that creation is a cyclical thing that happens again and again, and you want the living entities that are part of that cyclical again and again thing have something that's going to help them become to the stage of perfection, you would manifest Vedas that accommodate that, and the Puranas that accommodate that. So they're actually eternal, and they were divided by Vyas accordingly. It wasn't a creative writing spree. The Vedas are eternal. The eternal Vedas recognize there's modes of nature which aren't eternal. They're manifest and then they're withdrawn. But for living entities that will be under the influence of the material nature, which has modes of nature, there's ways that can draw this group and that group and the other group. And thus there's different portions of the Vedas besides 18 Puranas. There's sacrifice, there's knowledge, there's austerity. There's different things. Fruit of activities that are meant for elevation, because there's different living entities. Supposing you are the Supreme Lord and you're compassionate, and you know the condition of living entities eternally. You want them to come back to you, so you're going to provide every possible means. Standard. So that the 18 Puranas and the 3 modes of nature, dividing those 18 into 6, 6, and 6, it's very practical.
Can I say? I was thinking that, like, we have not the pure mode. We have combinations of different modes. Is it the same thing with Lord Brahma, or no? It is more goodness means the complete mode of goodness.
The Bhagavatam is in the complete mode of goodness. We're not. But by contact with that which is in the complete mode of goodness, it can help elevate us to that. And therefore, our acharyas recommend that we hear Srimad Bhagavatam in the pure mode of goodness. Even we're not. We're mixed modes, to say the least. Still, the Bhagavatam is recommended. Just like the pure holy name is recommended. You follow?
A little bit.
Okay. Pass the microphone to someone else. Yeah.
Maharaj, yesterday you mentioned that Shankaracharya actually read the Bhagavatam.
It's inferred because his Govindastika makes reference to pastimes of Krishna that only appear in the Bhagavatam. So he must have read the Bhagavatam, unless somebody, you know, nudged him and said, hey, these are nice stories. You haven't read the book, but they're nice stories.
Right.
We assume he's read the Bhagavatam.
But how is it that he landed up with an entirely different conclusion then?
He had a mission. We'll hear about it. The answer to your question comes up in text 47. He was instructed by Lord Vishnu to do what he did. So he did what he was instructed to do. He did it really well. Yes.
Guru Maharaj, this is regarding the living entities, conscious and possess consciousness.
Living entities are conscious and consciousness.
Consciousness. So when a living entity is a Brahman, realize what happens to that consciousness?
What happens to the consciousness? Well, it depends. I mean, if you're a Mayavadi, you'll say things that aren't true. But if you're not a Mayavadi, you will say things that are true. Or if you're a Vaishnava. So what happens to such persons, they're also consciousness. They just deny that they have consciousness. They're conscious and consciousness, regardless of their philosophy. The materialist, the transcendentalist, the Brahman realized, and the Bhagavan realized soul, conscious and consciousness. That's their position. The Mayavadi will say no.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Just pure consciousness. Anything else is false. It's philosophized. It's word jugglery.
And second question, Guru Maharaj. Sukadeva Goswami was in the womb of mother for 16 years.
Yes.
How did he knew about Krishna that he said?
He heard. Vyas was teaching his students. His wife was in the audience. She heard. And Sukadeva Goswami, who was within her womb, also heard. So the attraction for Krishna started to awaken. Not fully.
Thank you, Guru Maharaj.
Yes, way in the back. And I think this will be our final question because our guests are arriving.
What is the etymology of Mayavadi? Why are Shankaracharya called Mayavadi? What does it mean?
What does it mean?
Mayavadi, what does it mean? Etymology.
Ah. Vada. Vada means doctrine. Mayavada. It's actually in... We'll get there, text 47. But, you're the second person to ask the same question. So, in Padma Purana, Lord Shiva says to Parvati, the Supreme Lord requested me in the age of Kali to speak Mayavada. It's right in the Sanskrit. So, Vada means doctrine, the doctrine of Maya. Maya covers Brahman. Or Upadis cover Brahman. It's a false doctrine, Parvati, but I was instructed to say it. So I said it. The means, Maya covers Brahman. Vivarta Vada is another. It's Shankara's term. Vivarta Vada. The doctrine of Brahman becomes covered. Or Maya Vada. Brahman becomes covered by Maya. And those Mayas are Upadis, designations. So the living entity, God, etc., they're Upadis or features of, well, here's some more. Your intelligent audience asking questions before we get there. We'll get there. In detail, Jiva Goswami, it doesn't leave anything out. So, stay tuned. Thank you all very much.